Good evening, everybody. I've got 5:30 on the clock, and I know we've got a 7 o'clock Planning Commission meeting, so we'll go ahead and get started. This is the September 11th council briefing. We have a handful of topics to go over tonight. First, I've handed out a calendar to all of you showing the council briefings through the remainder of the year that are currently scheduled and the topics we're thinking about. I would point out that at the next council briefing, one of the items on there is for City Council to come up with topics to discuss with Representatives Michael and Senator Yarborough. And then we have a special briefing October 23rd for Council to have a dialogue with those two state representatives. So you might want to start thinking now over the next 30 days so that when we come in a month from now, you'll have some ideas of what you want to talk about with them at the end of October. With that, the first item that we have on the agenda for tonight is a post-legislative session debrief with our consultants out of Tallahassee, Public Affairs Consultants. We have Ms. Erin Ballas with that firm, who has prepared a presentation that we've got in handout form for you tonight. But Erin's going to walk you through some of what we saw this last session and maybe a little flavor of what we can expect this upcoming session after the first of the year. With that, Erin, the floor is yours.
Perfect. Well, first, I want to start by thanking all of the council members who came to Tallahassee. We had a great showing this year, and I'm going to go through here and probably point out a couple of places where you coming up to Tallahassee and seeing your members in Tallahassee had a huge effect on the choices they made, and not just that, but how they interacted with us in kind of the final days of session. You guys have really been growing that strength coming to Tallahassee. We've represented you for quite a few years, and there was a while where nobody came, and we didn't have any meetings with members, and now I think that relationship is really growing, and you're doing a great job with that. And you'll see in the packet that, and probably have already seen that you got money, and that's also a big deal as well because of that relationship that you developed with Representative Michaels. So I'm going to give you kind of the rundown of what happened in 2023. Seems a little old, so I'm going to try and remember as much of it as I can. And then I've got great news. They're going to be in committee meetings like next week in the House. So we can jump right into what they're getting ready to do and why only the House is meeting and kind of what they have in store for you as well. So the next page is about session. It began March 7th, so it was a regular session year. They ran exactly to date, 60 days later, and they actually finished the earliest I have ever seen them finish on the final day in the 15, 16 years I've been doing this. And they finished in such an amicable way. They actually sine died, and it was the anniversary of the tradition of sine die. So they actually came out, they dropped the hankies, they hugged, they had a press conference, they all got to go to lunch, and then they went home. So that hasn't happened in quite a few years. Actually, in years past, they've both left so angrily with each other. One set left. The only earlier session we've had was when the House signee died 3 days before the Senate. And that was the last time that we've seen an early signee die that didn't have to be extended because they might have had some things they were still working on. So the next page talks about the total bills that were filed. So total this year, the House filed 919 bills. The Senate filed 909. The total bills that passed each chamber in the House was 356 bills. So that kind of shows you how many bills died in each chamber. So in the House, they can file 7 bills per member. That's up from one the year before, but any bills that remove legislation used to not count towards you, now they do. So if you're going to remove some legislation, that still counts towards your 7, but your budget bills do not. In the Senate, you can file as many bills as you like, which is good. There's only 40 of them. If 120 members can only file 7, and they all do, you have to kind of balance that out. So the next page shows you a really important number, which is how much legislation was kind of left in that last day that was bouncing back and forth. So the way it works in the last couple days of session is that they can only take what are called message lists. And so those are the only bills they're still kind of ironing out. It tends to be bills that are trains, so like a transportation package. And this year it was vacation rentals. And that was being passed back and forth. And they often are working through the process. This year they just said, these 9 bills don't matter that much. And they let them die by signee dying. So we had some conversations the very last day. They brought up the bill in the Senate, which they said they weren't going to do. They passed it out, and then Speaker Renner said, we're done. I'm not doing any more of this. And so that bill died in messages as well. So the next page kind of walks you through the makeup of both chambers, and we went over this when you came to Tallahassee, but we have two supermajorities in both the House and Senate, which means that a lot of rules can be waived and they don't have to do certain things procedurally. I did want to let you know that none of those rules were waived this year. So we didn't see any kind of aggressive movement using the supermajority besides the sheer fact that they had them. There has been a couple changes in the House. They are down two Republican members. One just became a new president of a university, and then one just became a property appraiser. But we have one new one. So we have a new Republican who just got elected in a special election right after after session ended. And then these two special elections will take place, and they will be sworn in before session begins this year. They won't be in any committee meetings, but they will be on the floor when session starts. So, Speaker Renner and President Passidomo, they are the two leaders of the two chambers. We're going to go over how they both had slam dunk years, shockingly, and got all their priorities passed. So, President Passidomo, she had three big priorities this year. Number one is housing. It was one of the first bills passed out by both chambers. This one establishes kind of the new ways that we're going to do affordable or attainable housing, in the state. I think you're going to see some more real property language coming out of the Senate. That is something that is a priority of hers, because that's what she does, and that's what she will do when she is no longer Senate President. She will go back to being an attorney, and that is something that she wants to see some changes to. Hurricane resilience, so Senate Bill 250, the Natural Emergencies Bill by Senator Martin, that one was passed and included a lot of funding that went specifically to Senator Passidomo's area that had been hit by Hurricane Ian. And so that was a huge sweeping change that they saw as well. And then the wildlife corridor. So this is a new trail that now connects a existing trail that is, you can ride on it, animals can use it. And then in conjunction with that, they passed a Year of the Panther bill. So all that kind of focuses again in her district and was a priority for her.
Can you throw our urban trails in there?
Are we
and
next get all year? Of our, yeah, get everybody, there. As long as we can connect them all. Yes, so the Panthers can walk around. So Speaker Renner, he had a great year as well. HB1, which is the largest school choice bill that's ever been passed. It came out of the gate nice and early, was signed nice and early, and is now being used around the state to allow individuals to go and access funds to go to private schools or to homeschool families as well. They can receive the funding. A large focus for Speaker Renner was some long-term infrastructure, and you can see that reflected in the budget. There was a lot of money put in there for roads and for storm preparedness and for shoring up certain tidal areas and those type of things. So there was this was the largest water project year in history, I guess. But that's also to go with the fact that this is the largest budget we've passed and also the largest amount of vetoes we've seen. And so all those things track about a 10% increase each year. So there's a 10% increase in our total budget. There's also a 10% increase in the veto. And then so everything kind of trajects that way. And then there was another large anti-ESG, which is the Environmental, Social, and Governance Investing Bill. This bill talks to and speaks specifically to banks and other individuals about how they cannot discriminate on how they invest throughout our state. So just a big change for them as well. We do anticipate this year seeing more changes like that coming down the pipe. A lot of I'm not using this phrase. This is a phrase that the legislators use, but a lot of anti-woke legislation will continue to be moved through the process this year. And we saw some changes that we'll talk about at the end that indicate that based on changes to committee members. Other priorities that were passed this year, the new abortion bill that was passed, that's currently pending in some court processing. This changes it to a 6-week abortion bill. The Enterprise Florida bill, this removes Enterprise Florida from existence. A lot of the funding mechanisms that fell under Enterprise Florida, which was a private-public partnership, have moved into the Department of Revenue, and they are now managing that. So if you're looking for, like, there was a lot of pushback because the Department of, not entertainment, it was like the movies. So, like, the people who fund to help bring movies to our state and those type of things, all of those folded back under, not the Department of Revenue, Department of Commerce. So they're still in existence. There's just no more Enterprise Florida. That has been a priority for the legislature since Speaker Corcoran was in control. They just felt that the Enterprise Florida, the private side, was not bringing enough money to the table compared to the public side. A huge sweeping tort reform bill was passed. So this shortens the amount of time that individuals have to bring lawsuits to private businesses. It changes a few other aspects of that, but this is a huge civil remedies bill. Also one of the first bills that was signed by the governor, and a huge priority for the business communities. And then the last other priority was the death penalty. There was a death penalty bill that moved through. This changes not the portion where you determine guilt, but the penalty phase now only requires an 8-2 divided jury. Mm-hmm. So that bill passed as well.
So they're moving away from unanimous.
Yes, it's unanimous. You still need unanimous for the determination of guilt, but not for the penalty portion. So we're going to go through some of the priorities. If they're red, we oppose them. And then if they're green, then we supported them. And if they're yellow, we went neutral. You're going to see a lot of red. But the good news is some of them didn't pass. So that's the good part. The first bill that did pass, which I'm sure you all have learned about, is that you'll be filing Form 6-6s this year instead of Form 1s. The argument was that they think if they have to do it, you have to do it. There was some pushback from some smaller counties and much from everyone who said, we're already having some trouble filling the seats. If you expand this, we might have even further trouble. And the decision was, we don't care and we will pass this bill anyway. They also added in community redevelopment agencies as officers that have to comply with ethics training, and then some other smaller changes to the bill as well. The one change they did allow is that you don't have to do it until January, right? So if people were in between, they didn't want somebody who was already serving to have to come in and do it suddenly, because that's not fair, right? You didn't sign on for that when you first ran, so they were going to wait for people to finish their terms before they did it. The next one is
SB. But they're not really. They're not really waiting for us to finish our terms.
No. Mm-hmm. But they feel like they are. They felt like it was a compromise, and that's important to compromise.
So when's it due?
January 1st, it'll start.
Okay.
July of next year is when it has to be filed.
Yes.
Okay. It's for 2023.
Correct.
Right.
But the good news is you get lots of chances to edit it. The next bill, SB 120, this was a constitutional amendment. This one did die in committee, but I fully anticipate some kind of changes similar to this will come up. This bill specifically came up from two Miami-Dade members who are concerned because property values are so high down there that individuals who have lived in their homes for, let's say, 50 plus years, they can't afford to pay the taxes now because the prices are going up so high and they just can't keep up with this. So this was one of the ideas that they brought to the table. It did die in committee, but I think we're going to see some more changes similar to this coming down the pipeline. I don't know that it will take this exact same position, but I anticipate we will see some changes to homestead and property taxes and those type of things proposed in the coming session. The next bill, HB 209 and Senate Bill 1066, this is the recall of county commissioners. It was sponsored by Representative Redmond and Senator Collins. This died in committee. I do believe it will come back. There are a few counties who feel like they don't have recourse for how to remove individuals who maybe get into positions, much smaller counties and cities that don't feel like they have recourse if somebody gets into trouble once they've been elected. How do they remove them? They don't have the authority to do that. So this bill will definitely be coming back. I did want to let you know that already this year, HB 19 has been filed. This is a term limit for county commissioners. It will be moving them to an 8-year term limit. And that will be a constitutional amendment that will have to be approved, I'm pretty sure. It doesn't have a companion yet, but it's one of the newer bills that's filed. Representative Salzman from the Panhandle, she just filed that bill. The next is vacation rentals. I want to thank everyone for all your help on this, especially Mike, who I called numerous times while he was on vacation and in a panic was like, I need you to tell me if we can improve this or not, and Councilwoman Golding, who both were on the phone with Senator Yarborough late at night and early in the morning with every iteration that came out. This bill was not great when it came out. And I'm going to say it got a little better, and it got worse, and it got better, and then it got way worse, and then it died. So that's good. We're having lots of conversations. I don't think Senator DeSigley will file it again, as I have been informed that he does not want to do this. And that seems to be the trajectory we're on, is that nobody wants to do it because they can't figure out how to do it, because everybody seems to be upset about some portion of the bill. The platforms are the ones who obviously want to push it. They want to do something. And President Pasadomo, she filed this bill when she was in the House. This has been an issue that she has wanted to take care of. It's her term. And she just can't seem to figure out how to do it. So I think we'll see it again. We'll see a good version of the bill, and we'll see a newer version of the bill. But I do not think Senator DeSigley will be filing it. I don't know if Rep. Dugan will. He's pretty steadfast in what he's told to do. And that he kind of was like, I'll move it or until I'm told not to. And so we'll see who ends up carrying the bill in the House this year. But I anticipate that this one that died in messages will be back. But if they start from edit number 2 on Tuesday of the last week of session, I think we're good. We like that. But from there, we didn't really like it.
Didn't like New York City just get rid of all of their short-term rental stuff?
They
did some major changes. So, yeah.
And those changes are going to make it very difficult for people to have vacation rentals.
There's been a lot of conversation as well in South Florida, and specifically in condos, where vacation rentals companies are coming in and buying up such a large portion of the condo that they can draw the HOA. They raise the HOA so high that they force individuals out of it. And so the Miami-Dade legislators are concerned about it because some of those people are retirees. They come in, they think they have one thing, and then they're being forced out. So similar to the homeowners issue, talking about, you know, what is the right balance to we have moved past the point where someone is renting out their room, right? Where somebody is on premises. This is now becoming a full business where the Hotel and Lodging Association does not like it because, right now you're coming into their territory and you're not following any of the same regulations they have to. So I think it'll be interesting to see when push comes to shove where we settle. Or if we just keep somebody else will figure that out for us. And I think they have to be pushed to the impetus of making a determination on what they're going to do. But I think this year was the best back and forth we've had in quite a long time, where it wasn't just we're gonna take control, no local control over this. We're gonna do it all. And let's be honest, they don't have the money to enforce it. They have like 40 people,
right?
And those people are not gonna be able to enforce it anywhere. This is your one green. Congratulations, it was signed by the governor, so Duval County. You now have a special zone in Jacksonville and Jacksonville Beach that provides you exceptions for space and seating requirements for liquor licenses. Mazel. So congratulations, got through. It was a local bill, so you only need a House sponsor, and then the Senate kind of waves it through, and it was great. It was the easiest bill I lobbied. So good job. The next one we monitored as well was HB 477 and SB 1110. This is about term limits for school boards. This is just continuing that movement to an 8-year term limit, and they're going to continue to press it through, I think, on most things. The interesting part is that not even a year ago, Sam Garrison passed this, the 12 years, and then we decided a year later that it was 8. My understanding is he wanted 8 to begin with, but he had to compromise with 12. This year he didn't have to compromise. So they moved that on through. All right, HB 1515 and HB 170. This is a much improved version of a bill that we hated in 2021 and was vetoed by the governor. So this bill moves to a business impact fee before passing an ordinance. This is one of the answers that Senator Passidomo had brought to the table to deal with local, with not having to do preemption bills, right? If we put this in place, there'll be no more preemption bills. Everything will be solved. Let's see if it happens. So, pass both chambers, signed by the governor. I hope it works. The next bill is the Municipal Utilities Bill. This bill got really bad, really fast. But then, luckily, Jacksonville and JEA came in and scared the Senate enough that the Senate shut down on it. This bill was created specifically to go after Gainesville.
Yep.
Gainesville has been a bad actor. The pro temp in the House has been trying to get rid of them and take over it for years and years. They moved this bill forward a lot more than a lot of people felt comfortable with. And then JEA basically came out and Clay Yarbrough said, I will kill this bill in committee. And so did Representative Davis. And we said, listen, if you're going to do a carve out for JEA, we know some other people who you should carve out. And I think so many carve outs came to them that they were like, we're just going to kill it. And what they did instead is they took out and passed one special bill for Gainesville. Their board will now be made up of individuals who are appointed by the governor. And that's how we've solved that problem. So hopefully...
That's not coming back.
Yeah. Yes. So the good news is, I don't think that one's coming back. So if everybody just stays cool, if everybody's just cool, we won't have that bill come back. The next bill is the Solid Waste Management Bill. This bill, it's really not great. But luckily... it was killed early in session. What it was is that some people felt, some private entities that were small felt like they weren't getting a fair shake. And they whined enough that they got Blaise Ngoglia, Representative Ngoglia involved, who told us he was just trying to help out another senator who he thought would benefit from it. And then we brought to him how much of an impact, a fiscal impact this would be, and how you would have 400 garbage trucks running at 400 different times, and the bill died. So, we're hopeful this bill doesn't come back, but you just never know. The communication service tax, this bill did die, but was included in the tax package. So a little bit of a change to the communications service tax. It was reduced. We were told it was a compromise. It was a part of the tax package. Once something goes in the tax package, it's a one-year deal. So they will have to come back next year and either pass a bill like this to make it permanent, or they will include it again in the tax package. The good part about that is that the amount of surplus funds that they have to use for their tax package changes. So this might become a part of it or it might not. But this bill does get filed every year. So I think they will continue to chip at it as best they can to reduce that on their side of it. So the next bill is sovereign immunity. This bill's coming back. I don't think Representative Beltran will be carrying it again because this one had legs, and then Representative Beltran chose to express some of his opinions after being told not to on a gun bill, and that bill died aggressively in the House just because of him. The fact that it wasn't resurrected leads me to believe that maybe they weren't there to kind of have a conversation about it. I think Senator Gruters will carry it again. He fully believes that we need to increase it, right? There's been changes to the cost of everything. So should there be for sovereign immunity? We've already seen 16 bills filed for individuals who need to get the rest of their money, their settlement money, from the state. And so I think they're looking to try and figure that out so we don't have to also have these individuals come up and come through Tallahassee.
So our committee and Florida League of Cities is looking at this, and I think it's going to be our priority. We've only had our first meeting, so mm-hmm. after the first meeting, kind of felt like that might be the priority. We've got two more meetings, you never know, it might switch. But right now, it looks like the one that everybody's kind of zeroing in on, because there's such a disparity between the House and the Senate as to mm-hmm. what that number should be.
Yes, so the full transparency, we like the Senate version. It's a much easier number to stomach. You know, anytime it says millions, that's a huge change, right? And that changes how insurance is carried. And yes, so I think those conversations will continue to happen, but I do anticipate that we will have to come to a compromise on a number in the coming years. The next page is about your project. Thanks to Rep. Michaels and all her hard work, and Representative Yarborough, or Senator Yarborough, sorry, still getting used to that. Your water treatment plant and pollution control chlorine conversion system. Hopefully you've started contracting, and right? Everybody's good with that?
Yeah.
You've heard on it? Great.
Yeah.
That makes me happy because some clients have not heard their contracts yet, been seen, and we're about to go into session. So the next one is all these important session dates that are coming up. You will see that there's an extra committee week in here. That would be because the Senate is uninhabitable right now. They took down every window in all of the, so I don't know if you guys remember, when we went into the chambers, there were like these things that looked like blinds on the outside of the door.
Yep.
And years ago, those were put up to help the building maintain its hurricane proof. And when they put that up, it turns out that Wi-Fi doesn't work well with them. And so they decided a couple years ago, we're going to take those all down. Well, that's a great idea, except that the windows they have are not hurricane or waterproof. And so then they had to take down all of the windows in the entirety of the Capitol House. So the House, the Capitol, and the Senate. And the Senate said, that's great. We have to update all of our walls because they're filled with asbestos. And nobody can hang up their own things. So they have had to gut the entirety of that building and rebuild it. And the building is not ready for them. And so they will not be coming up that week of September. They will be joining us in October, hopefully. So that being said, September 18th will be the designation for the new incoming Speaker of the House, Danny Perez. He's from Miami-Dade County, so they will designate him, and then they will have a party, and then they will probably go home and have some fundraisers, maybe. So there will not be a lot of committee meetings coming in September. October will be the designation of Ben Albritton. He will be the new incoming Senate president. And then they will have some parties. And then there might be a committee or two. And then we will go from there. But this year is an early session. So when you guys come, you will need to bring your coats. And it will probably be raining. And it'll be freezing.
He's Hardy County, right?
Yes. Yeah. Polk or Hardy?
It's all the same. No.
I'm
just kidding.
I don't think they would think so. Excuse me. Imperial Polk County. So that leads us to some changes that we have seen. We have a new committee in the House, which is we're going to keep the Select Committee on Hurricane Resiliency and Recovery. And then we are adding the Select Committee on Health Innovation. There have been some significant changes to some members in their committees and their positions. Some members who have been trouble have been moved. And then some members who have some feelings have been moved to the committees they've chosen, they want to be a part of. There are two new members of the Education Committee that are Representative Fine and Representative Masullo. They have some strong feelings about how schools should be run. And apparently Rep. Masullo went to some school where they let kids pretend, identify as cats, and they have a litter box. I don't know. It was a thing he talked about, and so we're going to deal with that in that committee. You know what? Just don't watch that committee. I'll let you know what happens there. But we do know that there will be a big push for healthcare this year. So we know that they are going to work on some workforce issues when it comes to healthcare, specifically finding ways to alleviate the workforce issues. So more nurses, maybe opening up some opportunities for other entities to provide some of the services, but absolutely no scope, even though that's basically what it is. They're talking about ER diversion and health innovation and technology. And then they're looking to remove some regulatory burdens, specifically in the healthcare industry. That has been the number one issue they've talked about so far. This is a transitional year. So what you will see is a decrescendo in the power that Speaker Renner and President Pasadomo have, in a crescendo, so a big expansion into Speaker-designate Perez and President-designate Albritton moving into their positions. They will start to have a lot more control over what will happen. So they are at their strongest position going into this session. And then slowly what happens is your power tapers off in your leadership position as the new ones come in. Prior to, I would say last year, you would see the incoming speaker have a lot more control over the budget. When Speaker Renner was Speaker Designate, he was locked out of a lot of negotiations, conversations, and even into the leadership floor during that time. Speaker Sprouse didn't include him in any of those conversations. I don't know if Speaker Renner will carry that over with Rep. Perez. I don't think so. I think Rep. Perez will assert a lot of his power this session, and we will see him kind of move into having a much more impact. So Miami-Dade will have a much louder voice going into this session. But all that to say, all of it could change tomorrow. The other thing I will talk about is that we are in an interesting position in that with the governor running for president, how that will impact our session is still kind of unknown. Where all those chips fall each day kind of change. And so what we have seen in the past from the governor is a lot of assertion into what he would like done. And we don't know how much that will transfer as he is running for president. So I think a lot of that will ebb and flow. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that there is some funding coming into the area, into that into the college, HBCU college, from Volunteer Florida to help with their safety. It will also be interesting to see if that translates into the budget as well. The HBCUs historically have asked for a lot of funding help and have not been given it. They now have a little more leg to stand on to ask for those funds. We do anticipate that the budget surplus will be large, not as large as last year's, but we are on track to have a surplus, which is great. So I've been working with Mike and working on coming up with some budget requests. Water projects are still probably where the focus should be. Yeah, and urban trails. And I think we can go after grants for your urban trails as well.
We already got the grant recently.
Okay, great. So we'll see that in this year's budget as well. And those forms and those requests need to be in middle of October, by November 1st, for the House. And so then we can go from there. But you have a very strong representation in Tallahassee. So I think you just keep building those relationships, especially with your Duval members. You know, Senator Clay Yarbrough, he's awesome. He's obviously knows how you guys feel about vacation rentals. Pretty much think that we just are going to bang down his walls if he doesn't fix them. And then Representative Michael did a great job with your budget request, and she is in a great position to help with your budget issues or any other issues that need to be taken care of. And she was great. Every time I brought her, you know, our talking points or how we felt on something, she definitely took a good look at it and worked it behind the scenes to the best of her ability. And I appreciate that from her as well. That's kind of where we are.
Great.
Anybody have any questions? Yes.
Well, thank you for doing this. This was really valuable. And also, you can see us cringing. Brought back a lot of...
Sorry. Yes. Some PTSD.
PTSD.
It was really a tough session, but I am glad. I mean, exactly what you said. This is the most active council that I've ever been part of in terms of our legislative issues. What's the feel on property insurance? And how that's impacting basically every Floridian at this
right.
point, and do you have any kind of forecast or feel of where that's going to go?
I think we are going to hear the Democrats talk about it a lot. I think there will be conversations about it. If there is a decision made, it will be from leadership. This will be a leadership choice that both the House and the Senate agree to ahead of time. So what I will do is I will circle back with some of them. I think there's also this kind of feeling where they're like, we just did insurance. Like, they're feeling overwhelmed, but they also like know they have to do something, but it's an election year. And so.
Ask them how their insurance is.
Yeah.
Will there be more or less conversation about kids pretending to be cats?
Yeah, there will be more conversation about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I know that the National League of Cities is going to address that on FAST, the Federal Action Strike Team, that and the refunding of the disaster relief fund.
Yes.
And so I'm just going to bring that up in future briefing topics.
And the good news is that they know they have to do something, but there's also this, for the insurance specifically, this feeling like we need to see if what we did settles. And that's almost been the talking point that we've heard. It's like, well, we don't want to change it again because we just changed that. And you have, I mean, if I have one more member tell me to trust the process, I will lose it. But they fully believe that for when it comes to insurance, that they've fixed it. I don't think they have, and I think if we have one more big storm,
it doesn't seem that way, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, a lot. So after the storm that just went through, a lot of those individuals were with the governor and said, we just don't have insurance. What are you going to do now? How are you going to fix it for us now? We don't even have, we can't even have it because we've owned our house, and now we don't have it, and now what are you going to do? This tree fell on my house. How are you going to fix that for me? And so we are definitely in a place. And then, not even that, but like Fort Myers, that storm just blew right back in, and all those places that were just repaired are now possibly have water damage again. How do you deal with that? So, good question. When the bill comes out, I'll let you know. But right now, it's like behind closed doors on that, I think. But I anticipate you will see a lot of Democrats file bills that they think will fix it, that won't get hurt, would be my guess, honestly. But again, sometimes early sessions like this, they take a while to get going. So we won't see like the big substantive legislation probably until November, December, or that first week of session. And what you will see is a lot of committee packages come out. So that allows them to put three or four different ideas together, and sometimes new ideas that we haven't vetted at all, and put them out in a committee package that will move through the process and will basically have two committee stops, and then we'll go to the floor and then become law in like the span of a week. So that's what I think you'll see this year specifically, is a lot of very aggressive legislation moving in session proper, not in the committee weeks like we've seen in the past. I think it'll be a good year, hopefully. Yeah, it can't be worse, hopefully.
Well, we said that 2 years.
Do not jinx it. Please don't jinx it.
Another year.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I appreciate you guys, and I do really want to let you, I appreciate you guys coming over so much. It's obviously great when, because after you guys left, everybody was like, tell the mayor, tell the council, I promise I'll do it, I promise, Aaron. And sometimes it's easy for them to come over and forget, right? They get wrapped up in being together, and then they forget sometimes about the people that they have to answer to when they come
home. Well, I also think that when we come over there in a show of force, it's not easy to forget.
No, and it's not easy to look at you after they've just basically been talking in committee and be like, oh, that's right. I did say that. So I appreciate everything. And then I look forward to seeing what kind of budget requests we have. And what if you let me know what issues you talk to your legislators about, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
And I can follow up. But as always, thank you so much. It is our pleasure to represent Jacksonville Beach. We've been doing it for quite a while now. I don't even know how long. As long as I've been with the firm. And it's one of our favorites. So. Don't tell the others. Perfect.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks, guys.
And have a safe drive back.
Yes, yep. I appreciate it.
So the next topic that we have on our agenda is the city attorney annual performance evaluation discussion. I'll ask Kim and Sandy to come up to the table. Thanks, Aaron. And with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Kim.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Sandy, congratulations on your second year. Feels like we were just sitting here, though.
2 whole years.
2 years. So the reason we're here is Sandy's contract states that her performance will be reviewed at least once annually during her evaluation month. To help you with that process, I sent each of you a summary of all of the evaluations that you completed. The other thing that her contract states that I wanted to point out is that you'll consider the result of her performance evaluation and the guidelines applied to department heads in determining the amount of salary and benefit adjustment. So the guidelines we use for department heads and all employees is between a 2 and a 3%, 2 for average, 2.5 for above average, and 3 for outstanding. So do you have any questions about the process at all? I know we do the same one for Mike. So I'll turn it over to you. And once you determine it, I'm going to put it on for Monday's council meeting.
Well, I just want to thank you and your team for compiling all of the results. I'm sure it's not easy going through all of the department heads and all of the council members and putting it into a really concise, easy to understand format. So thank you for that. I think it was an excellent review. And I think especially appreciative of the council members for taking the time to do that and writing the comments. I think that's really where you can start to see some themes. Obviously, the BLSC was a big issue over this past year plus, so that's occupied a lot of your time and headspace, I'm sure. I think the theme was that we thought you handled it really well, a really difficult, complicated situation. I think that you have the confidence of the department heads. They feel that you're approachable and thorough and responsive to them, which I know is important for myself and I'm sure my colleagues. So I would support a 3% raise in recognition of this excellent review, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. And thank you all for your comments. I read them all, and I will make every effort to improve in every single category, regardless of the ratings I received. So I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to the next year.
You continue to exceed my expectations. I appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
Yeah, I echo the mayor's sentiments as well. I think you're doing an amazing job, and yeah, when it comes to communications, you're always very responsive. If I call, I get an answer. So I'm very pleased, and I do support the 3% raise.
Thank you.
I would support the 3% as well, and I would like to add that Mike and I met with Senator Yarborough today, and I had shared your opinion about Senate Bill 718, and he shared that with Senate staff, and he said Senate staff can't, I guess, how did he put it? The Senate staff can't...
Can only wrap their heads around it.
But they were very complimentary of you, and yeah. Said that they were aware that you were doing a really good job for Jack's Beach, and they felt that your opinion was very reasonable.
Long.
I think they hesitate to say, I don't know.
That it's right or wrong, but
right.
It was.
But they felt that it was
very thorough and well thought out.
Very good, and that they didn't think that Senator Yarborough needed to pursue anything in follow-up to the Senate bill. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and so I think that speaks volumes for the work that you're doing, and so I thank you very much for all that you have been doing and look forward to the coming year.
Thank you.
Yeah, I concur, and as along with Councilman Horn as the newest kids on the block, appreciate your professionalism and approachability and common sense approach, and just always willing to jump in, including walking with me down the beach one day to look at stuff in the back. So I would support 3%. I guess I'm the last one to speak, I guess, since it technically got me in there, but no, I think you're doing a good job. I mean, my numbers may have been different than everybody else's, but I'm one of those not everybody gets a medal guy, so threes and fours for me are great, so I mean, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
I will put that on the agenda for Monday.
Thanks. You all very
Thank
much.
You.
Good night.
Thank you both. Yep, so now I'll ask Karen and Jacob to come on up. We're going to talk a little bit about the life-saving station. Three areas that we wanted to talk to you about with regards to the life-saving station for some updates. The first is with regards to where we're at with regards to the building assessment. We actually had a firm come in. We talked a little bit about this at the budget showcase. We had a firm come in and perform a full assessment of the building. They looked at the structural, the mechanical, the electrical, the plumbing, and they gave us a determination of where they felt that there were some issues that were observed. And our procurement division's in the process of coming up with the appropriate course of action for moving forward. With regards to the facility improvements, I put in the memo, and you can see it in there. There were a total of 46 noted deficiencies. But those noted deficiencies were not all what you would consider to be substantive or requiring immediate address. So, you know, to give you an example, one area that they pointed out was the southeast corner of the building, where there had been some historical settlement of the building and a repair done, and they thought that that probably needed to be reinvestigated because some of the surficial concrete was cracking again, and it probably makes sense to figure out why. On the opposite end of the spectrum, there were things like door hardware that was not identified as being marine grade and should be replaced. And then there's everything in between as well. Two instant hot water heaters, one works, one doesn't. How important is it, and when should the one that's broken be fixed or repaired? So procurement is starting to look at these in terms of chunks. And the first thing that we've identified is that before we move forward with some of the interior physical improvements to the systems, the mechanical, the electrical, plumbing, et cetera, we need to make sure that the building envelope is secured first and foremost. So our procurement division's working with trying to get a firm in to conduct those investigations. The first two that we think are the most important is the southeast corner, and then two areas on the exterior of the building where concrete soundings were done and the sounding came back with a little bit of a hollowness to it. So in other words, you can imagine you go around a slab of concrete and you tap it with a hammer. If you hear something that sounds hollow, there's a question of what's happening underneath. And there were two areas on the exterior shell of the building that were identified as having those areas. We want to have someone come in and take a look and see if there's any type of structural repair that is necessary before we start doing additional work to the building. Another area that we identified is the roof. The roof was identified as having approximately up to 5 years left of useful life, so we'll be working that into a future CIP for replacement, probably in the next 3 to 4 years. And we're also taking a look at the windows. While the windows were replaced, I think it was about 7 or so years ago, the jams that the windows were mounted into are wood, and that wood is showing some decomposition and rot. So we've got a few different options that we're looking at replacing the windows in whole, or removing the windows, replacing jams, putting the same windows back in. So we're going through some iterations, but that's where we're at with regards to the structure of the building itself and addressing some of those assessment issues. I've got a matrix of the 46. I didn't hand it out to you because they're kind of one sentence snapshots of what those issues were. The second issue we wanted to bring you up to speed on was with regards to one of the deed requirements from the American Red Cross with regards to a historical marker. We had a good conversation with representatives from the Red Cross, both locally and nationally, a little over a month ago, to talk about what that marker should look like. And after the discussions, they said, well, they really put it in there as a placeholder to make sure that there is some type of historical recognition for the building. So once we walk through the current historical marker that's located adjacent to the building on a post, and the fact that there are two other markers on the building itself, one is the cornerstone that's in the building, and the other, or on the building, or set into the exterior, and the other one is the, I always get the name wrong, I think it's the Reinhold plaque, the Reinhold marker. They said, taking all of that into context, the only other thing that they would like to see out there is an actual official historical marker that designates the facility as being on the National Historic Register. So Molly's taking that ball and running with it. She's doing some research onto the different types of placards that are available. Once we find the type that we like, we're going to develop what that language will look like, send it to the Red Cross to make sure they're comfortable with the language. And then we will install it probably adjacent to the building, but not actually mount it onto the building. I think we mentioned to you before that the Florida Division of National Historic Register has reiterated to us verbally that one of the things making the building historic is both its silhouette and also the composition of the lime stucco exterior. So we've adopted an internal policy that says we're not going to mount anything to the exterior of the building going forward. So whatever we do will likely be a freestanding marker, probably on a single or dual post system adjacent to and right next to the building.
Isn't there a specific plaque that comes with the designation?
There's a couple different plaques, as Molly wants to come up and talk about.
Like, we don't have to go out and source it on our own.
We would go through that.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were saying she was looking for it.
They actually have several different styles of what they look like, along with several different types of mounting. You can do everything from a single pole mount, dual pole mount, an angled pole mount for people to read on a 45, or an actual mounting to different surfaces. So we'll be looking at the different pole versions.
Is that marker before us, before it's done?
The language? Or the marker itself?
The marker.
Yeah.
We can bring it back to you to take a look at before we do the install. Our thought was, and based on Red Cross, they wanted it to say that this building, you know, was placed on the National Historic Register as of this date, a couple sentences about it, and then they'd be good with it. But we can have you all take a look at the final image before we do the install, just to make sure we're all on the same page. And then the third thing we wanted to talk to you about was the rebranding of the station. We had a discussion with you back in May where we floated some ideas. You came back and gave us some direction as to what you wanted to see for concepts. So we had our communications manager, as well as one of our outside firms, work up some graphics of what these would look like. One of the things I'll start with is several of you made comment to the fact that you wanted to make sure that the PEG and some type of logo was used to make the public know that this is a place where medical attention can be can be provided. And we had mentioned to you at that time that the actual Red Cross is a trademark logo of the Red Cross. They don't allow you to use it. What we did, though, was communicate with them, ask them what would be acceptable, and what they agreed to was using an inverted cross, which is what you see here. It is not a red cross. It's a white cross on a red circle with text on the exterior as requested by the American Red Cross. So our thought process is that that logo would be first and foremost at the top of the peg in the round circle emblematic areas that are on the sides. Moving down below that on the peg, and we've got more graphics we'll show in a minute, but moving down below that would be the Ocean Rescue logo, and below that would be the VLSC logo. And then the text around the perimeter of the building, which we had originally put in blue, which you all expressed was not the color you wanted to see. So we're now showing it in red.
I'm gonna go ahead and pass those down.
So we'll pass these out, but you can get an idea. You can take one and pass it around. That'll give you an example of what the building would look like on the different sides with the branding as we heard you last time around.
So I do want to preface this by, you know, saying the reds, we have several different colors of red on here. I don't be too concerned about that. If we can decide on a concept, of course, we will work to make sure that the colors are all compatible and complement each other. But what you're looking at is the first picture is the east side of the building, which shows all three logos. The station logo, the new station logo, would be at the top in that circle that already exists. And down below that, we have this almost square shape, which we thought that that version of the Jacksonville Beach Ocean Rescue logo would fit nicely there. And in the rectangle below, there's the VLSC logo, which has also been approved by Red Cross, by the way.
Yep.
And then we are showing the station logo only on the peg on the south side and the north side without the other logos there. And then all four sides of the building would have the signage that says Jacksonville Beach Life Saving Station. So we did, we heard what we took away from the last briefing was, A, that you all wanted to keep the red. So we want those shutters, the trim, and the signage to be red. And you all wanted to see a cross on the peg, which I think that this is a nice compromise for that. And we've Jacob developed this new logo to satisfy that. And then we only wanted maybe one logo for each of the organizations, and so we thought that those would be most appropriate on the ocean front.
Mm-hmm. Much better.
Is there anything on the peg in the west side?
There's a window there, so we're not able to put any signage there. So we are recommending just the Jacksonville Beach Life Saving Station, the name of the station on the west side.
Yep. Is there a south elevation or is it
There's one that just has this corner one that has the south and the east.
That's
the north. There's one that has the south and the east. This one. So you can see that on the south side of the peg, it has that station logo. And then on the south side of the building, it just has the signage, the name.
I think the two real visual sides that people see the most are the east and the south. I don't know what others think. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing each logo on either end of the verbiage on the south side.
Looking like an 8-to-8 entryway. I think this is really classic and clean, and I'm very happy with the way it's presented.
Yeah, I think you can end up putting too much on there, is my concern.
One of the things we were thinking, especially with the fact that we've got a new logo for the station itself, is that we would bring this all back to you for formal adoption as the branding of the station. So that way when someone says, how was this chosen, we can say, well, it was presented and it was ultimately adopted by council. But this is a brand new logo that we've never used before and that is really the Jacksonville Beach Life Saving Station logo going forward.
Particularly this new logo, if you all have a consensus that this is the direction you want us to go, we would like to have you adopt that by resolution, and we also recommend getting it trademarked. So if we can get a consensus from you all tonight, I think we can go ahead and apply for the trademark and start that process, and then bring it back to you for adoption.
I agree.
Yep. Okay. My only question is, on the sides of the building, it's all in capital letters. What did you try to do that in all capital letters, or no?
I did not think of that until.
If that's something you want us to look at, we can certainly do that, and that would be consistent with all the all caps and the other two logos.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's at this point, it's all an option.
No, I mean, I'd just like to see it if it was, yeah.
Considering everything is in all caps.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
Everything else is all caps.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a consensus in this is the logo design that you all would like us to work on.
With papyrus on for this?
You cannot.
No papyrus.
No papyrus. We'll try to keep the three logos consistent and compatible and try to use that clean, simple font, no papyrus, for all of it. And we'll try to do all caps, and that way we'll have one clean design for the entire building. Okay. Good stuff.
Good job,
David. Does council have any other questions on the life saving station at this point in time?
A small conversion, just so that people can see the logo. This is a little bit more, and it's still a clean building. It's a silhouette that gives it away, because they're not pasted all over there. Or even, just a thought. I would like to see that.
I'm good as presented.
I'm good as presented too. And honestly, I mean, if at some point we want to revisit it, we can.
Yeah.
You know, there's certainly nothing that would prevent us from doing that.
Let's
get it on the building.
I concur with Councilman Moore.
Okay.
Respectfully disagree.
Okay, so we can put something together for a resolution to bring to you all, and at that point you can tell us through a vote what your preferences are. But I do think that we need to formally adopt the new logo, so that we can go ahead and move forward with that on the trademark process, right? And then as far as how these are designed on the building, that will be for you all to decide before we finalize the design.
Okay.
Question? Okay.
Thank you, Karen and Jacob.
Thank you.
I may be putting one there.
Okay. The VLSC?
Yeah. On the west side, so they can see it from the south. There's like the one building that comes out.
The training room.
It's like right there, so it doesn't really. You can kind of see it from the west and the south.
Get this done. Get phase one done, and then revisit phase two.
And I don't know if you mentioned, Mike, but our recommendation is to hold off on the actual branding until we are further in the process of assessing doing those.
The exterior.
Deeper dives on the exterior.
Yeah.
But we can go ahead and start getting the graphics approved and getting that in the works.
You're
going to
do like the reverse.
Yeah.
Reverse circle.
I do too. It's a nod to tradition, and it clearly identifies the building as a place to receive medical attention, which is what we heard you all say you wanted.
We were very happy that the Red Cross signed off on that logo in approximately 2 hours. We were very happy with that.
Yeah, as long as we keep the text with the cross.
Yep.
The reality is everybody at the beach is going to say, go to the building with the Red Cross on it.
Yeah.
That's why.
That's probably true. That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, too. We'll now ask Director Fatides to come on up as we move into our next item, which is a revisit of the renaming of Huguenot Park. Jason, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mike. Good evening, Council. So it was about 2 years ago when we brought this subject up, and at that time we did receive your consensus to rename the tennis facility to Jacksonville Beach Tennis Club.
Yes.
I think out of the four, there were four council members that didn't like the names that were proposed. Council Member Nichols, I think you liked Sunset Park.
Or something, yeah.
And a former council member liked Osprey Park. So the direction we received then was to go back and revisit this and to find a more meaningful name, perhaps look at the deeds and some history there. We had subsequent meetings with the community who are very active and involved, and they came up with Fountain View Park. It was a unanimous first choice for them. And so the question for the council tonight is, do you accept that? Do you reject that? Do you have any, or if you do, if you have any other alternative names?
So. Just as a little background, Councilman Warren and I were not here. What was the reasoning behind needing to change the name in the first place?
Oh, I know that.
Warren,
go ahead.
For years, Huguenot Park has been, there's a Huguenot Park on the north side. And Jason and his staff get phone calls daily, weekly, hourly, by the minute, depending on people asking to rent camping sites, you know, because they're unfortunately think that people think that this is the one from the north side. And it literally, I remember this from years ago when Jimmy was in charge, it's become a cumbersome issue that it just never really got addressed. And then the whole world was like, we can switch it. But the idea was that there wasn't anything, there were no actual Huguenots associated with this park.
I don't think we know how it got named that in the first place.
Yeah, somebody came up with that.
The Historical Society has not been able to determine the source.
Yes.
And there's an active community down there in Marsh, and a lot of the crew are looking to just revitalize that area, and I think this was part of that movement. Ken has been active with the city of Jacksonville in regards to trying to get some work done there, getting a walking trail, getting some other things done, and I think that's, it'll give it even more.
But the immediate resolution was that we changed the name of the tennis courts, because that's where the phone was ringing, to the Jacks Beach Tennis.
Yes. Actually, it was ringing to the Parks admin office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got no problem with Fountain View Park. I mean, if that's what the residents want
to
do.
So Water Tower View Park is off.
Oh, man.
So,
I think it's pretty interesting that it's a unanimous 33 to somebody was doing some lobbying. Somebody was doing some lobbying, but hey, that's what they...
Well, to be fair...
I think it was all consensus, when, y'all discussed.
Yeah, the lagoon is the central feature of the park, and when we installed the lighted fountain, I think that really was the catalyst for them to zone in on that feature.
Like I said, I have no problem with the name.
I'm impressed with Ken and that group down there that have actually got, if you look, you know, there's 66 actual people that were involved in the decision-making process there, and so 50% chose that. That's all. I mean, you get a lot of input from that area, a lot of input from the community, so.
It was unanimous, so that's first and second choices for the 66.
Oh, sorry.
So it's, yeah, it was all it was 33 people.
Excited.
Yeah.
I was getting all excited.
33 is also an admirable number.
Mm-hmm. So yes.
Sure.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Gotta
keep that fountain running.
So where do we see this change if we are good with it? Where does this show up?
It will show up in a resolution, and at the same time, we will do the tennis club.
But where physically does it show up?
Signage out.
The only sign is on 16th.
There's a sign on the corner of 16th and A1A.
There.
Yes.
And will just have to be adjusted.
Yeah, we can adjust that, and we can put it also on the east side, kind of in the middle.
Jason's first priority would be to change it in the phone system.
Yep.
So that he stops getting the phone calls.
Yes, thank you.
Change it in Google Maps.
Yeah, we'll be making a phone call to Google.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck.
And it'll still take 6 to 12 months for people to stop getting those, but it won't.
So it sounds like there's a consensus among council to bring this item back for formal consideration.
Yes.
We'll never want to talk about the name of this park again.
I just want to say, I mean, just to be on record, I spoke to Ken about this, and Fountain View, to me, it's just, I was hoping that there would be a name that would be a little more distinctive, a little more creative, or have more meaning for, you know, Jacksonville Beach, but if the residents down there want Fountain View Park, I support that, but it just didn't grab me. So, yeah. I just wanted to say that.
Sounds like a retirement community.
Yeah.
Del Boca Vista Fountain View is too.
You know, my thought was, you know, was there an opportunity here for us to incorporate Benny Furlong's name? But she's already on the senior center, but it's right there adjacent to it, or, you know. But anyway, I'm willing to accept. I'm willing to accept what the citizens want.
If it's unanimous from them, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, the people have spoken.
Yes, I believe.
Sounds like you have your direction, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. So the next item we have on the agenda is an STVR update. Originally, when this was placed on here a few months ago, looking ahead, it was to discuss the actual rate structure that we use for processing registration, local registration with Jacks Beach. But since that time, that's kind of pushed to the side based on how legislation ended this past year with the possibility of capping us on what we'd be able to charge. But still, since there was a placeholder already in here for it, and Councilmember Golding and I had a meeting earlier today, we thought we'd give you a little bit of an update as to the conversation we had with Senator Clay Yarborough. Just so you're aware, and very similar to what Councilman Jansen was saying, not only does his committee already look like they're honing in on the sovereign immunity as being an issue that they're looking forward to, STVR is already looking to be one of the top two issues coming out of municipal administration as well. It has been a top issue, I think, for about the last 10 plus years. And I don't see it stopping anytime soon, because 10 years ago when STVRs first started affecting communities, it wasn't necessarily statewide. It was mostly areas where there was direct access to the beach and maybe a few other local areas. Over the past 5 years, the short-term vacation rental market has really expanded, and it's affecting virtually every community in the state of Florida. That's city, county, rural, urban, it doesn't matter. If you're an area where people want to do this, they're putting it up on the platform, and it could be just for an event that occurs once or twice a year in a community, but it's affecting communities across the state. So with that, I'll turn it over to Councilmember Golding to talk a little bit about what we talked about with Senator Yarborough.
Primarily, he was very gracious. He spent over an hour with us, a little over an hour. And, you know, Mike and I had worked on the what was a two-pager that ended up being, a packet.
Maybe a one-pager turned into a...
Right. And so we went over the information in that with him, just in a little more detail. And also talked about the legislation from this year, what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it. And, you know, I think he understands the issues for Jacksonville Beach, and... He, you know, the biggest thing I think that we conveyed to him is that right now they're, you know, vacation rentals are not being held to the same standard that our hotels and other businesses are being held to, and that's not right. Yep. There's no accountability. They can operate, you know, and there's nothing to make them, you know.
Do they fall under your committee?
Yes. Yeah. And so I think he gets it. I think he really gets it. He doesn't have any idea, you know, what is coming down the pipe, you know, this year. But he said he does know that the platforms, they're still pushing it because they still want to see something done. So that's, we pretty much left it by saying, you know, we are here to help him. If he has any questions or if he needs any data or anything, we are happy to do whatever we can.
Does it look like it's going to be a priority in your committee?
It's probably going to be one. It's probably going to be one of the top two. We had a lot of topics that we discussed on Friday, and there were two that seemed to get a lot of discussion, and the vacation rentals still getting a lot of discussion. A lot of communities are saying they're still having issues with vacation rentals, and it's a big issue for them.
And the issues are broadband. It's not that every community is dealing with the exact same issue. So to give you an example, for some communities, it's the fact that residents are complaining about the activity that's occurring at the short-term vacation rental. But you've got other communities, as we were brought up to speed on, Anna Maria Island, 65 to 70% of their residential units have now converted to STVR. They're losing their community. It's going to be a 100% commercial community at some point in the future, and that's not what anyone who lives there ever envisioned happening.
And then also there was discussion about losing housing stock for, you know, affordable or whatever, you know, whatever the term is.
Workforce.
Or whatever. I mean, because the vacation rentals really, truly are driving up the cost of properties. And so, and like Mike said, and changing the community, truly changing them. So,
So we wanted to give you that little update. We'll see where it goes from there. Like Sandy said, it looks like it's going to be one of our top two priorities coming out of municipal administration. There was even a little bit of talk about whether or not Florida League should be approaching the state reps to try and form some type of a task force or a joint committee to actually work on this issue, rather than each person just throwing out their grenade from one side or the other. And again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. There are a number of issues that affect a variety of different communities with this.
They should leave it up to the locals.
I think that train left the station a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So that's effectively the STVR update that we have for you at this point in time.
I do have a question, though, because one of the things I brought up that I thought we were also going to talk about in this briefing is the fact that this last session, it was looking like having a separate inspection fee might be a good way to go. And is that something that we would want to look at doing? So that, because if they do end up capping the registration fee, we could still have an inspection fee. So
communities hasn't been tried, tested, and proven.
I don't know if it's been tested or proven in other communities, but somebody mentioned that was an approach that they were going to take to, you know, because if your registration fee is going to be capped and you can't cover, you can't cover the cost of the inspections.
We have to be able to recoup the cost.
Right. And I'm sure you all know how much time Steve puts into it. I mean, and he certainly is finding things, which is important because.
Yeah. He's going to need somebody standalone to do that also. I mean, and if we need to fund the position, I mean, it should be the people doing the short-term rentals just to fund it.
Right.
Steve's got the time to do the inspections. It's the fact that the registration fee doesn't cover his time. And the issue that we ran into this last legislative session is that not only would they have capped it, but they also would have allowed up to 25 units to be on one registration.
Yeah, exactly.
For $200.
So it's like, that's all you get is $200, and you have 25 units.
But then you also have the issue of them registering, then dropping off, and then re-registering again 30 days later, so to avoid
avoid having to do any type of local registration. And we discussed that with Senator Yarborough as well, the fact that the fee doesn't cover the reasonable cost. If they had moved forward with the structure that they were proposing in session this past year, people would have lost money hand over fist in terms of just recapturing your cost. And then the fact that those that play the game of, well, I pulled my property off, so now I don't have to locally register. 30 days later or 60 days later, they put it back on. We send them a notice.
Yeah,
and by the time they get the notice, they pull
right?
it back off the platform again. Yeah. And they just play that cat and mouse game, knowing that you can't do anything to them because they're complying by pulling it off the platform. So that's a problem.
I'm heartened by the fact that at least he is seeing you guys as a resource, and I don't know if he'll continue to be in a position to have influence on this type of legislation, but at least he's checking in with the local, mm-hmm. you know, impacted municipality, yeah. which is, shouldn't be something unusual.
The other thing I might add is we really push the importance of allowing us locally to address things and then escalate it to the state, as opposed to what they were doing was maybe trying to put a lot of it on the state, which I think we all agree, the state doesn't have the ability to do that. And so, and we're the ones that are most impacted by what's going on, so it's much better for us to have that ability to do that. And so we certainly, I think we helped them understand that too, so.
Yeah, the two issues we pushed was they should do local registration before they get their state license, not vice versa, which is the way it works now. They get their state license and then they muddle through a local registration process. And the second one is that local ability to do a temporary suspension of their activity if there are certain things that we identify. And right now we don't have the ability to do that. You gotta hand it all off to the state and wait and see what the state does with it. And that's just not a good way to do business.
And there's no reason to believe that, I mean, with a lot of things, if you have that ability to suspend them for just a short amount of time, you know, the goal is compliance, and then once they're compliant, then hopefully we don't have to worry about it anymore, right? But we need the ability to do that. That stick, you know?
You mentioned Anne Marie Island. I wonder if there was the ability to pass something at certain levels to say, you know, there is a per capita amount, there's a limit here. You can't
the state,
say that. The
state statute does not allow us to prohibit them at all. Which means caps, which means anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why even the suspension, I mean, we can't even suspend them because that's in effect prohibiting them until the state gives us the ability to do that.
There's a pro property right and pro business element in Tallahassee that I don't believe would entertain that in any way, shape or form. That's the sad reality. So jumping down to H, committee assignment reports, does any council member have anything they want to report out on?
I gave mine with Fort Lee Cities. The only other thing I wanted to add was they have the FAST that's coming up in Fort, they're going to address in D.C. the National Flood Insurance Policy Program and property insurance, along with the need to refund the disaster recovery fund. So I wouldn't mind being the representative from Jack's Beach and some National League Cities to go up there with the approval of you guys for consideration to travel up there.
Would you like us to put something on for formal approval of Council Member Jansen to travel for FAST? Okay.
This is not a committee report.
Done.
This isn't a committee report, but just because my phone's blowing up, apparently there's a J bill coming. Have you guys heard about this? To put to give Duval County the ability to impose a tax of, I think it's 1% on food and food at a restaurant, 2% at a hotel, 1% tax on all food and beverage, and 2% on food and beverage at hotels to fund homeless programs. So. You get any? Literally, my phone was blowing up with the downtown business owners talking about it. So it looks like it's. They said it's being voted on tomorrow, but that's not how J bills works. So I don't know if it's the delegation. I'll try to figure out what's going on there. But just so you know, in case you hear about it, that's what they're talking about.
Okay.
We'll
it sounds like Sandy and Dan had a lot of items on Friday for discussion in your committees.
We did.
Yeah. I was reasonably disappointed.
Oh, okay.
We had a couple of items. We had a nice presentation from the city, Port St. Lucie Director of Development and Planning and Development. I think it's great. They're great. They're awesome. He was showing off their technology that they have and all that. And then we had a presentation from some guys. They're both vendors/manufacturers of Vertiport little plane thingies.
Yep.
And there was a discussion and a presentation on that. So I can only presume maybe that's going to be pretty high on the priority list, but I just thought for what was 2 hours and 30 or 40 minutes, honestly, by the time we got going and then broke for lunch and then we didn't go back.
Oh, you didn't go back?
No, we were done at 12:40. So I was kind of like,
fine.
We had a working lunch. We had to.
Yeah. Well, we had a working lunch. We worked right through lunch. Yeah.
And we went right up to 2.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was my first one, so I won't. We'll see how it goes. Not good. Jeff seems like a good guy. And
Jeff Branch.
And maybe in defense of him, the chair was not there. And so somebody was filling in. The mayor of St. Augustine is the chair. Okay. And she was not able to be there, so the vice chair was sort of filling in. So maybe that was part of it.
Well, just so you guys know, the topics we discussed were law enforcement, recruitment and retention, vacation rentals, legal notices for variances and land use changes, because somebody's wanting that to change. Virtual meetings, public records exemptions for reports of municipal code violations, so the code enforcement anonymous complaint issue, right? Cybersecurity, public records exemptions for city clerks and election officers, and the sale of tobacco and nicotine products near schools.
We had 5 topics, but 2 of them fell on deaf ears. We didn't even garner reaction from the crowd.
Really?
Yeah.
So, literally, with these presentations.
Wow, that was it?
A little weird. Yeah.
Well, but there's
virtual meetings would have been a great idea.
Yeah. Well, there's an opportunity between now and October for other items to be in.
Yep, they asked for.
Okay.
What your priority. Yeah.
So you may have some more things in October.
Okay, I think this adjourns our briefing. Thank you all. See you next Monday for the council meeting.
Thank you.